Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Eurobytes. Today we're going to be joined by Christian and Todd, who's going to be our host for today. Thank you, as always, for having us, Todd. And we're here with two major topics tonight. First one being the developments in Germany surrounding the AfD party, and the second one being the so-called uni party in the UK, Labour and the Tories, apparently having a hard time in local elections. Good evening to both of you. And Christian, do you want to start right away?
Yes, absolutely, Lucas. So obviously, whenever Todd asks us, like, hey, when are they going to ban the AfD in Germany? We can never give a satisfactory answer because it's a very, as everything about Germany, it's a very complex issue. But we are in interesting times. I mean, so much. Much so that quite often I come across people opining on the AfD in Germany.
Is he freezing for you, Lucas?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, okay. Christian, my man, you need to come out and start over. Come back, come out and start back over. Reset yourself.
I think he got canceled. They found out that he was going that he was going to trash talk the still Minister of the Interior, Nancy Faeser, and they cut his cord.
It is quite dramatic what we're seeing.
It is incredible. So
let me ping him on Telegram.
Yep. Thank you.
Oh, there he is.
I'm going to let him back in.
Yeah, I'm just going to get rid of his other one.
Good evening, Christian, and welcome back.
Thank you.
I already mentioned that.
What I said must have been too interesting for the powers that be.
I mentioned already the German Minister of the Interior, Nancy Faeser, who's going to be Interior Minister for another day or so, cut your cord. Rightfully.
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised.
Now, back to topic, please. You mentioned that.
Just start over your answer. Just start over your answer, and I'll cut it out the rest.
Okay, brilliant. Okay. Well, so quite often, Todd, whenever Todd asks us, Christian, Lucas, when are they actually going to ban the AfD? It's very, as everything with Germany, it's very complicated and there's very little precedence. I mean, there had been parties banned, one Nazi successor party and the Communist Party in the 1950s. As with everything, when it comes to court precedence, it's obviously subject to shifting opinions and a shifting constitutional landscape. Our old constitution is not quite as well. We don't even have a constitution in Germany. It's called a basic law, so it's not quite as ironclad as in the US constitution. But yeah, it's a difficult topic. We might just give you our 5 cents on it, since both Lucas and I do have a legal background. But it is interesting what has been happening. Obviously, once it became clear that some sort of betrayal of the voters' will had taken place after the election. So imagine the three main parties that were the loser parties, the coalition of the Social Democrats, the Green Party, and the Liberal Party, sort of more like libertarian, but sort of left libertarian. They were the losers of the election, and the CDU weren't really the winners either, because they fared very badly in the last election.
True.
So you would think that the voters would say, hey, based on that, well, let's see. There's definitely the voters want a policy shift. But as it turns out, in the negotiations for the new coalition, they agreed on a policy that is even more hard left than the last coalition that has been voted out of office. And that happened before a lot of the decisions were made before the new parliament met. So the old parliament clung on to power. So the old parliament that still had the old majorities, which is something that is possible in Germany, until the coalition, if you don't have the winner-take-all system with a two-party system like in the United States or to a degree in the United Kingdom, a coalition needs to be formed, which can be cumbersome. So the old parliament stays as is, and all the ministers and the chancellor keep carrying on as sort of a interim sort of interim sort of government.
Yes.
But they use that to change things massively. And what now transpires, the new coalition will enter under far more left policies than the previous one that had been voted out of office. And lo and behold, AfD is riding high in the polls. And just before the old parliament is about to finally hand over to the new parliament, the Federal Constitutional Protection Agency, one of our 17 such secret services, domestic secret services, has come out with what they call an expert opinion, an expose, that it actually certifies, yes, the AfD is extremist. And with that, back to Lukas.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Now, what Christian mentioned already about the German decision, or the German government's decision, not to basically convoke the new Bundestag, or basically also the Bundestag president's, like the Speaker of the House's decision not to do that. This has shown that democracy has a hard time right now. Keep in mind, yesterday was the day of the freedom of press, either yesterday or today, and Germany's press freedom ranking has tanked. Now, there's so many developments that make it clear why this ranking has become so unfavorable for Germany. I'd just like to add one thing to Christian's point at first, and this being when the old Bundestag is still convoked, the interesting thing that happened is, we mentioned this already roughly a month ago when they voted for this huge debt plan, when they authorized the government to take on roughly €1 trillion in debt. That is $1.1 trillion in debt. When they did this, there should have been the new Bundestag session already. This meaning that the new Bundestag majorities would take place. Now, when Christian spoke, the first thing that came to my mind was so-called lame duck government and how Germany can't have one. Now, keep in mind, this new government will have a parliament majority of out of 630 seats. The new black and red, or CDU-CSU-SPD government, will have a total of 328 seats. That meaning there's going to be a majority of 14 seats. Now, if you have 14 congressmen who decide not to support these decisions, who are they going to count on? Obviously, the Green Party, because keep in mind the Free Democrat Party, the FDP, or as Christian called them, and I do need to disagree staunchly and strongly on this. They're neither liberal in a classical sense. They have never been libertarian. They're, to keep a third L for an alliteration, they're losers. They lost the election. They're out of Bundestag, and I assume they're going to be out for good. The interesting thing about the FDP is that they have somehow managed to make themselves obsolete. People who actually want things to happen that the FDP originally stood for in their party program and their pamphlets are now either voting for CSU when they're in Bavaria, or in the rest of Germany and in Bavaria too, to be honest, they're going to be voting for AfD. Now, the interesting thing that happened is CDU became first in the election with roughly, correct me, Christian, they had 28.5%, that being an increase of 4.4%. Now, Friedrich Merz, the soon-to-be chancellor, explains how this was a huge success. This was, nonetheless, the second worst result in CDU history. We need to keep this in mind. This was not a success. CDU being under 30% is still a defeat for this party. And now what have we seen? Friedrich Merz pulling a 180-degree turn in terms of debt policy. He also didn't come true on defense policy, to be honest. Reintroducing draft didn't really happen, isn't no longer being talked about. Foreign policy in EU foreign policy is now happening through the Italians. A super interesting and, in my opinion, a very welcomed thing to see that Giorgia Meloni, the prime minister of Italy, is doing a great job in representing Europe as a whole, especially towards US President Trump. And what are we seeing right now is that the CDU is getting the bill for this. This meaning that out of nowhere, AfD became first in the polls. At first, they were like, oh, the first poll is happening where AfD is coming in first. Is this just a margin error or something? No. By now, like in Germany, you have several institutions who do the polling. You have INSA, you have Forschungsgruppe Wahlen, which means like research group elections. You have Wahlkreisprognose, which is like fringe left-wingy thing, like not even the SPD believes them. You have YouGov, and then you have the first, as a first institute, you have what are they called, Allensbach. And they're all favorable for different parties. But keep in mind, now every single institute, every single poll sees AfD in first place. And it's also the last day or the last week of Nancy Faeser's reign. I don't want to say what kind of reign, but her reign is coming to an end. And at this point, she's like, oh, look, AfD is now confirmed right-wing extremist. And nobody knew what's going to happen. This is just a statement. There's a 1,100-page pamphlet on why AfD is now confirmed right-wing extremist party. But Todd and Christian, guess what? We don't really know because we can't read it. There's only one newspaper or one news outlet that has gotten some quotes out of it. I think it's either Spiegel or Correctiv, the same people who also did the re-migration thing where right-wingers from CDU and AfD met how to deport people from Germany. Well, the interesting thing you need to know, listener or viewer, AfD is now on the track of being first in several polls, and the reaction of the political establishment is to kind of pull the trigger and say, okay, they're now up for, like, we're going to shoot them down. When they're at their highest, they apparently are flying too close to the sun. Now they need to be brought back to reality, and because the voter is apparently so stupid that he can't do that, now the German institutions need to do it. Let me ask you a question, because
in the U.S. we had a similar situation the last term, and I think the majority of the American people, 2/3 now, realize that that Biden was a very corrupt and almost, I would say, dictatorial government. When does that happen in Germany? When do the people realize that this government is tyrannical to some? You know, you're seeing it across Europe.
Well, I see positive development across Europe in most governments. Just don't see it in Germany. Kristen, maybe up to you.
The government's instituting these policies. The people are rising up. Yes, in the UK and elsewhere. But what do you think?
Not happening in Germany. It's not happening. Go ahead.
Could I advance an opinion, which is super interesting? So obviously the liberal press in throughout Europe is clutching its pearls, and even in the UK, rural Scotland, I go to a pub yesterday and I'm being asked, like, Christian, why is it that the AfD is riding so high? So people even in the UK who normally never bother that much about German politics ask these kind of questions. And they're like, and then the better informants, and why is it so high in East Germany? And again, I think we looked at the electoral map after the election. Our first episodes, where essentially you can see West Germany, East Germany, and the color of the AfD is sort of some sort of dark blue, and so all of East Germany is dark blue with very few exceptions, and West Germany is a bit more of a checkered picture, mostly black, the CDU color and a bit of red and a bit of green sprinkled in there. And I would say in the East, with the benefit, quote unquote benefit, of people having experienced an actual authoritarian government, they know one when they see it, at least the older folk and folks, I would say middle-aged Gen Xers until boomers in East Germany, I think they're more keenly aware of it than most average Germans. The really interesting thing is, people get raided for posting satirical posts. I think we discussed that before, of our Minister of Economic and Climate Affairs, Mr. Habeck, where there's a popular German shampoo brand called Schwarzkopf, meaning black hat. And somebody else took the hat of our minister Habeck and wrote Schwachkopf, which in German means dunderhead or just dumbass or something like that. And they got the house raided for that. So people are like, oh, I'm really afraid about authoritarianism of the AfD and all the crazies. So I'm like, well, people get their houses raided for insulting. Well,
that's my point, right? And yeah. In the US, we have, yes, the national level has been fixed, but at the local and state level, we still have this going on. I mean, Florida changed their constitution last night to allow, in the dead of night, to allow a lot of tyrannical stuff. So this movement is ongoing, and it's happening in Georgia. It's happening in other states, but Texas just passed an anti-meme law. The House passed it. If you make a meme against a sitting politician, you can be, you know, arrested. So it hasn't passed the full legislature yet, but this is still ongoing. So I guess my point is, I see what's happening in the UK, but Germany, they don't seem to be realizing this. I'll leave it to you.
I think this, as someone living in Germany, I think the situation does not feel, it does not feel bothersome enough for people to actually change the course at one point. You know, it's kind of like this frog sitting in the on the stovetop, and you turn up the heat slightly. So I think this is one point, and the other point is that unlike other European nations or countries, whatever you want to call them. Germany's whole path of re-education after World War II, which was mainly done by the Americans, one has to say, the so-called denazification, came with the disadvantage of now believing strongly in what the government says, because the government must be good.
Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
This is a special report. Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At US Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. US Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
After all, it's a new government. The old one was bad, you know. Mm-hmm. And back in the 50s and 60s, I think this was true to some extent. And keep in mind, as Chris mentioned earlier, there were two parties that were banned in Germany. One is SRP, the Sozialistische Reichspartei, or the Socialist Empire Party, basically, which is the right-wing party, I think you meant, Christian. And the other one being the KPD, the Communist Party, which was, I think, banned in, I don't know, the late 50s or early 60s. So back in the day, the German government wasn't that bad of a thing. And, you know, freedom of speech was a thing. It only has come under attack over the past 25 years, I'd say. Like, when I remember my childhood, when I was a teenager, I was not living in Germany, but what I heard from Germans and what I read in German newspapers as an Austrian was that civil rights were under attack due to back then Ursula von der Leyen, who was the foreign minister of the interior, what's now Nancy Faeser, who are doing this internet censorship and stuff. They always do that under the great promise of increasing safety for kids or whatever. But in the end, it's all about saving data, storing data, making a bigger picture of you. Now with the whole software side of things, it's about making a profile. And I do think the government does make a profile on you. Back in the day, you had to say certain words for you to be wiretapped or something. At this point, I'm sure that many people are aware of the fact that they are constantly being watched. They're watched by algorithms. They're being checked permanently. And especially in Germany, where there's kind of like this situation where you need to behave well for you to work and function well in society, this is a very difficult development, I think. Like, people can't really, you can't really step out of the, you need to toe the line. You can't step out of the line, because otherwise there's going to be some social consequence as well. I had this talk recently in my friends, like with some friends and with family members. The interesting comparison between Austria and Germany, keep in mind, it's the same history, it's the same culture, it's the same language, it's roughly the same GDP per capita, same news outlets, like you cross-read the things. Austrians do like going to Northern Germany on vacation. Germans love going to Austria on vacation. We do the same thing, basically. Germans also being the largest group of foreigners in Austria and vice versa. I think there's like also a lot of Austrians in Germany. There's one difference, and it's politics. And that is because Austria has this kind of more classical liberal stance towards what do you think and what does the other person think. And I've been living in Germany with interruptions for roughly 12 years now. And I do need to say that one thing I notice more and more is the fact that Germans like to self-censor out of fear for being censored by someone else. And Christian, I don't know how you see it. You have been living in this country way longer than I have. What's your point?
I mean, it is interesting. I mean, it is as you say. I mean, I've lived in Austria for a year and in Germany for 20 years. Before then, I spent a lot of time in the English-speaking world. Austria is, I mean, they have a word which says, which is called conciliatory. So Austrians, there's a much more of a live and let live. And it's not the outrageousness. I mean, I think a communist and a quote-unquote far-right person in Austria could have an argument, but they won't go at each other's throats. And they kind of agree, whilst they very much disagree with each other's viewpoint, it's not quite as outrageous. You're like, if you meet somebody with my politics in Germany, actually, like myself, says openly what he thinks, it's outrageous. I mean, normies implode. It's just something like, how can you? This is, I mean, it's a classical NPC meme, whereas in Austria you don't encounter that. It's, and it even goes back to literature when you read old stories by Austrian writers about Vienna in the 1900s, which was like such an intellectual powerhouse in so many ways. That at one point, Sigmund Freud, Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, and all kind of other, let's call it luminaries.
So they lived in Vienna at the same time. Yeah. There has been a chance that they saw each other.
Exactly. Yeah, in the same time. And this obviously created an atmosphere where you met all kind of people and you encountered these kind of perspectives. Whereas in Germany, same in Scotland, interesting enough, we will pivot into England, which is slightly interesting. If you say certain things where you're like, well, I don't think that nationality should just be handed out if you don't have a blood relationship to Germany, like people implode. Or if you actually defend the AfD, I mean, even yesterday, they're like, I mean, even like semi-informed normies were like, well, but AfD is terrible, right? I'm like, or they're like extremists. I'm like, no, I mean, nothing that the AfD says is actually extremist. It wouldn't have been extremist 20 years ago. Saying, well, you know, we need to control migration. Yes, we need to mass deport. And probably we should not escalate war with Russia beyond means. And they're like, but they're so dangerous. And this is kind of a tedious conversation that you have, where I said, well, at the one hand, democracy tries to defend democracy, but bans the party. And here's democracy defending itself, but it's raiding the houses of people who make mild jokes about politicians. And then, but there's so many crazy people in the AfD who totally are pro-Putin and pro-Russia. That's sort of the last go-to, which is true. And that's one of my main criticisms about the AfD. They kind of lionize Russia in the sense, oh, the Russians are going to come and help us. It's almost like a messianic thing.
That's true.
And I don't agree with that. However, then we've got the extreme that Mr. Merz, until a couple of weeks ago, was still fantasizing about selling German mid-range rockets, Taurus rockets, in order to destroy the civilian bridge connecting the Crimea with the mainland,
the Kerch bridge, I think, right?
Yeah, which I find absolutely crazy. But yeah, very so yeah, that there's a difference, and I guess one thing I might add, why West Germans, not East Germans. Again, there is a reason why East Germany votes more AfD, because they know an authoritarian country, that a regime that lies to them, because West Germans have never encountered. And I grew up with in a country that had a fantastically competent regime, a pretty reasonable justice. Yes, it tilted ever so slightly left, but not crazy. The police were super competent. Those were people who were trained for 3 years. Everybody was well-trained, competent. They didn't do anything crazy. And we had one influx of asylum seekers in the mid-1990s, where suddenly we got numbers we did not see until 2015 again, until Merkel threw open the border. Suddenly, before the internet, word spread how unbelievably generous German asylum law was. So hundreds and thousands of people arrived in Germany, but it being the 1990s, where people were still sane, there was still bipartisan consent. We need to change the European immigration rules. If you're coming from another EU country where you've got no reason not to claim asylum, but yet you travel to Germany, you have no reason to stay in Germany, which pushed the whole problem towards Italy and Greece, who rightfully said, look, well, you need to help us somewhat to bring these people back, but we didn't. But at least something was done in the 1990s, which is why I'm like, well, so many things that you call so far-fetched and far-right, they wouldn't have been even right in the 1990s. I mean, even social Democrats. Well, I mean, Todd, you know that yourself. There were even non-crazy Democrats until not that long ago. I mean...
No, I guess we went through, yeah. You know, the scales were on my eyes 5 years ago. I mean, before 2020, I was ignorant. But now I see when somebody comes and raids your home in the middle of the night or early morning or late at night for a meme, there's a fucking problem, you know. There's a problem.
That's true. I think there's also one more thing that I'd like to add, and this is over the past 20 years, what has happened in Germany is there's been some kind of institutionalization of the left wing. We're always like over the past years, we've been talking about the Open Society Foundation, you know, George Soros and stuff, but the things that happened, they didn't really need a global scale. There's no bad person or bad conglomerate. Like, it's not like John Hobbes, Thomas Hobbes. We don't have the Leviathan back there, and there's a bad behemoth or something. What has happened over the past 25 years in Germany, and this has started, in my opinion, with the first Schröder government in 1998 and has continued ever since through the Merkel government and all these things, is out of nowhere, the left realized that they can just piggyback off the government, that they can just take, like, back in the 60s, there was a so-called march through the institutions. Right. Left-wingers saying that, you know, when they grow older and stuff, they are going to infiltrate the government. They're going to infiltrate all the institutions. And guess what? This has happened. And the people back in the 90s, they were suddenly in the spots where they could actually open or close the faucets where money comes out of. And what they started was handing out huge checks to organizations supporting refugees, supporting, like, you know, free media and all that stuff. Free media is super important, but free media has now become like a competitive term. We all know who's saying free media is an important thing. And guess what? It's not the media outlets who are actually really free and independent. So what has happened is that Germany has created some kind of industry surrounding asylum seekers,
Antifa
and anti-right-wingism. They had the advantage of, like, back in the 90s, Christian, you were alive at this point, I was not, but back in the early 90s, there's been this fire or arson, one needs to say, in Rostock. There was a house in the former GDR, and a fire broke out, and there were, like, Vietnamese workers in there, and there were some skinheads and right-wing extremists who kept people from leaving the house, and basically people died in there. And still to this very day, left-wingers say, look, this is who right-wingers are, and this is why we need to fight them, and this is why Lisa Paus, the minister for family affairs in Germany, hands out, I think, roughly 150 million euros a year for a program called Live Democracy. And, you know, you set up an association, you say, okay, I'm doing democratic memes. And guess what? The government gives you money. No shit. There is a project called Democratic Meme Factory. They've got roughly 300 followers on Instagram, and they were paid roughly €500,000. So you have people who are too stupid for the workforce. You have people who are incompetent to be part of society because you cannot, like, you can't let them work with other people. You cannot let them interact with the general public because everyone's going to be like, what the heck is happening there? But these people find a job in the Democratic Meme Factory. Are they being paid by Campact? Are they being paid by the Amadeo Antonio Foundation? Things like that happening. Maybe they're working in the political faction of Die Linke or SPD or the Green Party. You have a whole industry that is fighting towards the left. And by doing so, they narrow down the opinion corridor further and further. And this is the point that I actually wanted to make in the initially. Germany is kind of this Helfer complex, this supporter complex. As someone who's a foreigner in Germany myself and who has the privilege of being able to leave at any point, you know, Germany for Germans must be like Hotel California. You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. The whole situation has become that Germans think they can fix the world by doing things their way. But what they do not realize is that everything's going down the drain and has been so for the past 10 years. The tipping point was the refugee crisis in 2015, and things have never been the same since then. And interestingly, this brings us back to the initial question. It has become more and more okay to say these things. So Todd, I do think there's kind of like the silver lining on the horizon. Mm-hmm. The bad thing though is, keep in mind, the German government is, the German democracy is so-called Wehrhafte Demokratie, which means it's, Christian, do you mind helping me? And
sort of like well-armed democracy. Well-armed defensive democracy, yeah?
Exactly. Yeah, it's like a defensive democracy. This is how I could say. So the German government has the power. Like, the institution that now declares AfD a right-wing extremist party, the Federal Office for the Protection of the Constitution, it's a federal office, which means everyone in there is being appointed by the Federal Minister of the Interior, which means everyone who's in there for the past 3 years has been in there with the acceptance of the AMPL, the Traffic Light Coalition, which means red, green, and FDP, which means it's tilting a lot to the left. So what does that tell us? Well, the authority that the Constitutional Protection Offices, out of which are 17, as Christian said, what they can do is they have the power to appoint so-called V people, Verbindungspersonen, basically connection people.
Undercover agents.
Yeah, they can put agent provocateurs into these parties. There might be as long as we don't see the 1,100 pages of this pamphlet, you cannot be sure why AfD is being considered right-wing extremist. And for all of those who think that this might not be true to the point, keep in mind that in roughly 10 years ago, NPD, the real right-wing extremist party in Germany, was about to be banned. And at one point, NPD went to the courts and was like, we would like to see the documents. We would like to see the proof.
So we are in the factory in Kentucky. This is Alp World HQ, and we are at the end of the packing line. So I'm going to show you how it works. We have the card, throw it in there. There's a packing slip, and then you have the Alp. And four, but that seems honestly like a lot. Three now, but it's good. You just pack a punch that, you know, for a normal 19 brand, it'd be like eight. You know, we think three is fine. Next one. Again, four. I'll throw three in just to keep it fair. Okay? There you go. So you can see you can get fast at this. And really, it's just a matter of repetition. This is kind of the assembly line that, you know, Henry Ford devised so long ago.
Tucker, stealing all the Alp because...
proof. And the German government's like, you can't see the proof. And at one point a judge actually asked Can the government please hand in a list, only for the judge to see, not for NPD to see, of so-called agents provocateurs, so that he can figure out what's real NPD and what's just paid for by the government? The government went no. And this is why NPD still exists in Germany. And the same thing, in my opinion, is happening with AfD. As long as you do not see the 1,100 pages printed out, as long as you cannot see them, something's wrong here. And everyone, like this being the last point that I'd like to make before heading over to the UK issues, every single Democrat, and now not political Democrat, but government-wise Democrat, everyone who believes in the democratic institutions in Germany has the duty to ask for these papers, because we're like, if we should trust the government, like if we should trust them, they shouldn't have a hard time showing us the documents, or why would they not?
Well, interesting enough to put an almost comical note to that. I mean, bottom line, the NPD, the party prohibition of the NPD sort of fell over because it turned out so much of the party leadership consisted of government undercover agents. It's kind of like, Todd, what was that group that was so transparently Fed Force, we termed them?
Patriot Front.
Yeah, exactly. So Fed Front. And it was kind of comical. And then essentially, as it turned out, as people learned later, without obviously having seen the actual document, so much of the political party consisted of undercover agents that no one kind of knew who actually made the decision. So, and that's how it fell over. And that might possibly benefit the AfD. We wouldn't know. Segueing into the UK, there is a thing in Germany that applies to the UK as well. You can still live unbelievably well in some parts of Germany, not encounter the problems that were both created by migration, and it's increasingly harder because they get further and further into the countryside, but you can sort of escape it, and you can still live in industries that are not so high energy that they're badly affected by the energy prices. And in the United Kingdom, that's sort of the case, where increasingly I see a radicalization, or we could call it reality bitization, as it were, by a lot of the English, because in England you just can't escape it anymore. I mean, every little town is. There was recently an article of a town in England that has 13 or 14 Turkish barbers, which is sort of like an interesting development, because there are all these little, mostly shabby looking barbershops popping up all over the place, and you're like, how many barbershops can a place need? And obviously then that's not their main business model, to the point that folks see foreigners everywhere queuing in front of them in line for the socialized Medicare, and increasingly people are speaking up, but obviously the Keir Starmer government is heavily cracking down on people, and quite often people who speak up about that get a longer prison sentence for speaking up about it. Probably not sometimes in the right tone, but then I think recently a migrant who battered his girlfriend, and then as the policewoman arrested him, he raped the policewoman, and I think the woman who spoke up against that got a higher prison sentence than that guy did, or he might have only been like by 4 months more, which is, so that's sort of an interesting bit. Now, when you speak in Scotland, you can be, if you don't live in Glasgow, where they dumped a lot of the migrants, or some of the more troubled cities like Dundee, you can be blissfully ignorant of these things. And that's kind of the conversations you have in pubs, where folks, they can't understand why the English are so bigoted. And obviously then there's all Scottish-English bit like, oh yeah, they've always been terrible. And we showed them in Braveheart and And so when you're asking that question, Todd, I guess it's the same in the United States, even though it becomes progressively harder, but you still can by and large live away from these realities and wonder why all these bigoted people in flyover country get so angry about like having 30,000 Haitians dropped in their town. Because
what has happened here is that two things. One, the USAID cut off other funding to the NGOs, and two, they're firing lots of government workers. So you're seeing the epicenters of this woke mind virus atrophy in record time, like Washington, the property market is supposedly crashing because everybody's lost their jobs. So it's fascinating to watch with the funding is what has been driving all this.
Yeah, I mean, that is fascinating. And we definitely need a Elon Musk Doge moment in Germany. And my prediction is it's a much more multi-headed hydra than I think with Elon Musk and his team very quickly found sort of USAID as the main node. I think it would be much more difficult to do it in Germany because it's like a hydra. It's much more much more divergent. But interestingly, probably one topic in the UK. So interesting enough, we are seeing, when we think about democracy, the will of the people progressively ignored. We see it in Germany, where very clearly the politics of the former government was no longer wanted. That's why they lost the election. But guess what? You got more of what you voted for. And now everybody's screaming murder because people are then saying, well, fine, then I support AFD. The same has sort of happened time and again in the United Kingdom. So very quickly, like the last couple of days were local elections in England. And Reform UK became the strongest party. And I've been criticizing Reform UK and Nigel Farage in particular time and again over the last couple of weeks. But at least he formed a formidable organization. That's what he's good at. To the point, a friend of mine also signed up for Reform UK. They from 0 to 200,000 members, and I think the second strongest party in the UK, didn't take them a long time. He then wanted to run as a councillor, and they did a fantastic vetting process online. Okay, have you posted ever something on Twitter that we ought to review? Have you done this? What's your background? What are your views? So they really made sure that to filter out sort of folks who might have their heart in the right place, but might otherwise get themselves into trouble if the opposition digs into them. So kudos to Nigel Farage. They became the strongest party. Both the Tories and Labour, the Uni Party, imploded by 2/3 of their vote in this local election. What makes this so interesting? Once again, Labour didn't sweep into power, but because they had a fascinating new recipe, they were flanking the Tories from the right verbally, yeah, sort of, kinda. But essentially, nobody turned up for the Conservatives, and Reform didn't have enough time because a snap election was called, and there was only so much that the small party could do at the national level. It is reminiscent of another moment that Reform UK, when it was called something different, had. 2019, the last European election where the United Kingdom was allowed to vote, the Brexit Party, as Nigel Farage then called it, he had renamed it from UKIP, swept into power, destroyed the Tories, and thereby the Brexit procrastination policy of Theresa May failed. And it was one of those moments. Remember, Brexit was voted for in 2016. It hadn't happened until 2019. So, but then voters were like, yes, that's what we really, really meant. And then it got procrastinated again after Boris Johnson was swept into power on a landslide victory. So whenever particularly the English voters are asked, is this what you want? If do you want to regain your national sovereignty? Do you want to put a stop to this crazy migration? The answer is always a resounding yes. And then that makes it really interesting. And just to give you a couple of data points, where a lot of English people had enough, particularly the English. It doesn't affect Scotland as badly, even though it's getting there. Like a house on an average salary, it used to cost you 4 average annual salaries to buy a house. Nowadays, that's 12 annual average salaries, certainly in England. It's a bit better in Scotland. And so folks increasingly are like, look, we've got all these crazy violent bits. We've got girls being raped in large numbers, groomed by Pakistani rape gangs. We've got our medical system is increasingly broken, trying to service all these foreigners, and house prices are through the roof. I mean, surprise, surprise. If you increase the demand for a good, you drive up the prices. And so that's where we are. And probably just handing over back to you guys. Any thoughts or questions on that?
Well, Gawain Towler had a really good piece on CDM yesterday, which I put out. So everybody should read that. He was Farage's number two and was in reform until recently. Still in reform, but not in the leadership anymore. But fantastic article. I'm hopeful for the UK. We'll see. You know, we'll see what happens. I mean, is it too late? I don't know.
I mean, yeah, we keep asking that question. It's very, very hard to say. You know, it's a great one of history's great nations. They might have some fight left, but it's very, very difficult if you look at demographics. I mean, even in terms of how much folks not born in England or not being originated here have swooped into positions of power. So it's very, very hard. We need to see that. Probably a footnote. I mean, I mentioned that before, and I think in our episode on the 11th of November, Remembrance Day, where, I mean, the two traditions that the English still militantly uphold is obviously Remembrance Day, thinking about the dead of World War One. And, you know, with some quite often a bit of a false narrative, oh, we saved Europe then. I'm like, that was a bit of a tragedy that you guys didn't need to get involved in World War II. Probably arguments could be made. Did you guys, again, need to get involved? But still, they're a great warrior nation and still one of the best militaries, if not by size, then certainly in their quality. And I live very close to a memorial ground. And today there were these old veterans and it was a pleasure to see how, I mean, there were guys in the 80s. The oldest guy was actually 99 years. And
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, not himself, but all the rest of them stood ramrod straight. And towards the end, they took a picture where they helped him up. And then he was actually not just I served as a cook or anything. He actually served on a minesweeper at Omaha Beach, where the Royal Navy did take over the minesweeper. So the guy was the real deal. And I chatted to him. And as you find with that generation, very modest and cheerful and still sharp as a whip. So that was good to see. I mean, there is, particularly in England, and with folks who've served in the military, still a lot of pride and a lot of fight left. But again, and footnote to that, the memorial meeting was very top heavy. Probably easily, and I'm in my mid 40s, I would have been the youngest person present there. That wasn't to those people. And other teenage neighbors of ours, when they passed me in the way, I'm like, hey, are you also on the way? And they're like, oh, you know, but there were a bunch of old people like standing, like some sort of service or something.
Funny.
Yeah,
Well, I've got to run to another show. I don't know if Lucas is going to come back, but I've got a split.
I think
so.
I can wrap it up here. I think we had very similar observations between the two countries. And we'll keep you updated, all the listeners, so much happening. And who knows in what world we'll be living in just a week from now. So thank you very much, Lucas and Todd, for making the time. And see you next weekend.
We'll see you next weekend. Thank you.
Take care. Bye.